fields where military infrastructure and soldiers can land in, Iran has the ability to attack these and render them unusable. So America's not stupid enough to expand the war and fight on Israel's behalf. It's what Israel's yearning for. It's not going to give it to them because America will not step on its interests, but Israel that it created to protect Western interests.
Okay, that's all the time we have for tonight's show. Allow me to thank my guests, activist and political analyst Batul Sobeti, joining us from the British capital, London, and from the International Action Center, Ms. Sarah Flounders, speaking to us from New York. Also, thanks for staying with us on tonight's Spotlight. It's good night for now.
This is the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran.
This is the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran's broadcasting. The voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily via the internet address www.parstoday.com/en. You can also listen to the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on Hotbird, Intelsat 902, and Eutelsat satellite, as well as via internet. You can also listen to IRIB English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for more details.
And now we enlighten you with Ayah 35 to 37 of Surah Ali Imran, recited by Shahriyar Parhizgar.
Bismillahir Rahmanir Rahim. Dhurriyatan ba'dhuha min ba'dhin wallahu samiyun 'alim. إذ قالت امرأة عمران رب إني نذرت لك ما في بطني محررا فتقبل مني إنك أنت السميع العليم فلما وضعتها قالت رب إني وضعتها أنثى والله أعلم بما وضعت وليس الذكر كالأنثى وإني سميتها مريم وإني أعيذها بك وذريتها من الشيطان الرجيم فتقبلها ربها بقبول حسن وأنبتها نباتا حسنا وكفلها زكريا كلما دخل عليها زكريا المحراب وجد عندها رزقا قال يا مريم أنى لك هذا قالت هو من عند الله إن الله يرزق من يشاء بغير حساب
of Allah, the All-Compassionate, the All-Merciful. When the wife of Imran said, "My Lord, dedicate to you what is in my belly in consecration, accept it from me. Indeed, you are the All-Hearing, the All-Knowing." And when she bore her, she said, "My Lord, I have borne a female child." And Allah knew better what she had borne, and the female is not like the male. I've named it Mary, and I commend her and her offspring to your care against evil of the outcast Satan. Thereupon her Lord accepted her with a gracious acceptance, and made her grow up in a worthy fashion, and he charged Zechariah with her care. Whenever Zechariah visited her in the sanctuary, he would find provision with her. He said, "O Mary, from where does this come for you?" She said, "It comes from Allah. Allah provides whomever He wishes without any reckoning."
This is IRIB English Radio. Coming up is the news.
Well, welcome to the studios here in the capital, Tehran. This is News. Thanks for joining us. We are extensively covering what has occurred in the past hours, practically. Iran's Islamic Revolution Guards Corps, the IRGC, to have launched extensive retaliatory missile and drone strikes against the occupied territories, many of which have landed through drones and missiles. IRGC announced launching the strikes in a statement defining the mission as what it has called Operation True Promise. In the studio, we have Gisumi Shahmedi with us to give us more details about what has occurred. Well, Gisa, at this point, I'm sure the whole world is aware of what has occurred, but tell us the latest that you have on this.
Well, the latest, we are still waiting for more details to, of course, bring you more details about this retaliatory attack. But I can tell you that last night was a very special night for Iranians. Crowds, huge crowds, gathered in the streets in the capital, Tehran. In front of Tehran University, a huge crowd of students gathered, and then people started coming and joining them in their celebration. And then they walked down the street to arrive in front of the British Embassy, where they stayed there for about an hour and a half celebrating. There were fireworks, kaveh, there were people chanting slogans, cheering, those who were in the car honking the horn, the motorcyclists, and they were carrying flags of the Palestinian flag, the flag of the Islamic Republic of Iran. And basically, it was a very special night for Iranians. Let's not forget that Iran has been very patient with the Israeli regime, and at this point you can say that Iranians had run out of patience. They were really waiting for the IRGC to have some kind of retaliatory action, and when the news broke out that Iran has attacked some Israeli targets in the occupied territories, you could see how happy they were, and cheering the IRGC. You do know that for many years Israel has been targeting nuclear scientists, military officials, but this time they stepped over the red line, and this time it really couldn't remain unanswered. And that was the mood last night. Like I said, people were very happy in showing their joy and supporting the IRGC, and also sending a message to their Muslim brothers and sisters in Gaza, who last night, after more than 7 months, it was the first night that there were no attacks on the Gaza Strip.
The news of more drones to be on the way has been published now. It hasn't been officially acknowledged, but it's still out there, and it seems like that is somewhat being now recognized for it to be true. Do you have any information on that? Supposedly 80 more drones to reach their occupied Palestine within an hour or so.
I'm just checking the news right now to bring you the latest. I also have the unconfirmed reports that more than 80 drones are also on the way. It is a huge attack, and let's not forget that the Israelis, although they were prepared for an attack, according to Israeli media, they were not prepared for an attack of this scale. And while more drones on the way only means one thing for the Israelis, and the fact that that facade of being invincible and being strong, well, that is definitely gone. And another thing that is for sure is that the Iron Dome that they were so proud of has proven to be completely ineffective. We've had some pictures going viral online of these drones hitting their targets, and you do know that Iran has acquired a significant amount of technology regarding producing drones, and most of them are stealth drones, so it won't be that easy to intercept them.
All right, thank you very much. That's Ghassan Shahmadi here in the studio with us, giving us the latest. We are going to get an analysis on this. Let's bring in Shabir Rizvi, political commentator from Chicago, who joins us. Shabir Rizvi, welcome. So here we have it. Finally, you know, you are looking at the courage that not only Iran, its officials, the IRGC, but also the Iranian nation has showed, not only in terms of the patience throughout the years and decades, and here we have this retaliatory attack to take place against the Israeli regime, of which we have seen the rockets, the drones, and the missiles to have landed on occupied Palestine. Perhaps like no other time, we are seeing how Israel is broken in how it cannot even defend itself when it comes to this type of attack, again, with Iran being the country to have had the courage to do this. Tell us how that changes the equation, first of all, of the region when it comes to Israel being one of the menaces of the region when it comes to its, bad behavior, to say the least.
Assalamu alaikum. Thank you for having me. Let me first start off by extending my congratulations to the IRGC and the entire Iranian nation for this extremely successful night that has finally put down any rumors that may have been circulating prior to that, you know, the IRGC will refuse to strike or their power. We've seen this put to rest, and we've also seen before our very eyes, and even with perhaps even more swarms of drones, that the Israeli regime has been put on check. I mean, the you saw it for yourself. There's footage circulating everywhere, whether it's drones or rockets or missiles. The Iron Dome is a facade. It's fake. It's worth nothing. It's been crushed. The high-tech Israeli military sites have been targeted and have been disposed of. Not only that, but we see how just fragile the Zionist regime is. While Iran is raining down rockets on the Zionist regime, Yemen is also able to strike able to strike Israel. Hezbollah is able to strike Israel. Iraq is able to strike Israel. This illegitimate state is being put on notice. And something else that's also being put on notice is the social ramifications of aligning yourself to this Zionist entity. And what I mean by that is my head is turning to the treacherous regime of Jordan, where the king of Jordan attempted to stop Iranian rockets from hitting their intended targets. Meanwhile, the people of Jordan flat out reject this move. They went to the streets, they protested their leadership, and they cheered on the Iranian rockets. So you see not only the popularity of resistance, but you also see how unpopular it is to go against the resistance, where the very authority of people that are aligning themselves to the Zionist regime, their authority is being put into question. It's being put into check. The king of Jordan is being put into check. how dare you stop this proper retaliation, this just retaliation, where Israel has crossed a serious red line, and this retaliation is completely justified under the UN Charter. If this had happened to any other Western regime, they would have responded disproportionately. All hell would have broken loose, but the exact response that was given by Iran was proportionate, it was just, and I might add, it's completely, again, within the legal boundaries of the law. This is something that Israel or any Western regime time and time defiles.
Let me bring in now Jamal Khanj, who's an author and political commentator from San Diego. Jamal Khanj, welcome. Taking a look at now the U.S. reaction that we're seeing here, like the U.S. Defense Secretary, we do not see conflict with Iran, and also Joe Biden telling Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu that U.S. will oppose any Israeli counterattacks against Iran. How is it that the U.S. can come out, make statements like that, when about 7 days or 10 days ago, we've had that terrorist attack that happened by the Israeli regime on Iran's consulate in Damascus in Syria, where the American fighter jet with American bombs struck that building against Vienna conventions, breaking international rules and laws, while both have done so on many occasions. Iran is acting within its rights because it was struck. How do you, that point obviously is not going to be echoed in the news or covered as much, Western media in particular. But can you put that into context for us in terms of how now Iran has reacted?
Well, you know, I mean, first, I wasn't surprised, to be honest with you, with the response that we received from Biden. This has been the case forever between when it comes to Israel. There are, double standards in the U.S., and Israel, basically, I would say the queen of applying double standards when it comes to the U.S. government. I mean, when Israel attacked the Iranian diplomatic office or mission, consulate in Damascus, basically it was silence. I mean, they did not even say anything about it, even though it violated every law. Even during World War II, you know, wherever there were diplomatic missions in countries, it were never even attacked, were never targeted. So this is unprecedented, basically, the attack against the Iranian embassy in Damascus. And everybody was expecting a retaliation from Iran. I mean, this is within the right of any government to protect its own citizens, its own missions, its own country, in a way, because it is really an Iranian land in Syria. I mean, it has complete sovereignty over that property in Syria, according to, again, to the international law and the relationships between countries. And so I'm not surprised. I wouldn't have expected anything else from Biden, to be honest with you. I mean, we have two political parties in the U.S., as you know, the Republicans and the Democrats. And both leaders are groveling, basically, to Israel, trying to who is going to be basically more servile than the other when it comes to serving Israel and its interest in Palestine. Following up to the previous interview that you had, I'm really disappointed. I'm saddened by the fact that an Arab space, and here I'm speaking as a Palestinian, as an Arab also, to see an Arab space like Jordan space to be used to protect the state of Israel from missiles fired from Iran and the drones from Iran. I mean, this is within the right of Iran to do what they needed to do, to retaliate for an attack. This is not something happened out of the blue. It was expected. Maybe it actually, as you said, it took even longer than it should have been, maybe 2 weeks, allowed possibly even Israel to prepare for it more than it should. But it is within their right to be able to do it even as soon as they could, and they should, and they had done it. And they, I mean, I would, you know, add to it, congratulate the forces that targeted Israel today. And I hope it is really not the end of that relationship, because this entity, Israel, does not understand civility. They only understand power. And unless you really treat them with deterrence, they are not going to sit and go, you know, basically behave in a civil way, which I never believed they would be able even to behave in a civil way. I mean, Hezbollah in Lebanon and now the resistance in Gaza, they prove to be a deterrence for Israel. And that's why Israel counts to 10 before they would attack, say, beyond the southern region in Lebanon, because they know there is a deterrence force there. The same thing, that's why they want to be able to wipe out, as at least Netanyahu keeps saying, to wipe out the resistance in Gaza, because they are afraid of that deterrence. Sadly, again, the Arab countries around Palestine, they acted as a buffer zone, and I just don't know how people are still able to tolerate those kind of regimes.
Well, Trevor Risby, let it not be forgotten here, and it should be reiterated the types of capabilities that Iran does have. The IRGC has not used most, if not all, of its capabilities. This is just a sample of what it can do. And when it comes to either missiles, drones, bombs, ballistics missiles, etc. So the big question right now remains as to the way that the Israel regime is going to react or not. Now, we're looking at this extreme cabinet that's run by somebody who is clinging on to office by the name of Netanyahu, of which even the U.S. apparently can't tame. And the U.S. has asked the Israel regime not to retaliate. Are we looking at maybe a smart minds to prevail in the Israeli regime war cabinet that we should not counter-react, or else we may endanger all of occupied Palestine where they are on illegally?
Netanyahu is a mad dog, and he's completely unpredictable. I would not discount him doing something outrageous, even without U.S. permission. I am expecting the Netanyahu regime to do something in retaliation. They were foolish enough to even start this in the first place by attacking sovereign land, specifically Iranian soil in Syria. And I expect them to do something even more treacherous. With that being said, I don't expect the United States to try to escalate things further. The United States was just humiliated by Yemen. In fact, they were actually asking Yemen for a diplomatic solution. They were unable to stop the Red Sea blockade that Yemen started back in November. If they cannot stop Yemen, they won't be able to stop Iran. So that will stop there. We won't see anything from the United States unless it's hit-and-run tactics that are just meant for a response. And these sorts of tactics Iran has been dealing with for well over 45 years. Netanyahu, on the other hand, is a completely different variable. This is a person that is holding on to power because the moment he's not in power, he is facing several charges. He's facing years, perhaps decades in prison. This is outside of the quagmire that he's created in occupied Palestine. This is corruption charges. This is a man that a so-called man that is basically fighting for his political career.
And that does it for this edition of World News. Bye bye for now.
Our voice comes from the heart of beautiful Iran. IRIB English Radio.
On Sundays. In the name of Allah, the All-Merciful, the All-Compassionate. In the name of Allah, from whom I hope for nothing but bounty, and from whom I fear nothing but justice. I rely only upon His word, and I cling only to His cord. In thee I seek sanctuary, O possessor of pardon and good pleasure. From wrong and enmity, and from the changes of time, and the recurrence of sorrows, and from the striking of mishaps, and from the expiration of my term before preparation and readiness. From thee I seek guidance to that wherein is righteousness and being set right. From thee I seek help in that which is linked to success and favorable response. Thee I beseech for the garment of well-being and its completion, and for the covering of health and its permanence. I seek refuge in thee, my Lord, from the goadings of the Satans, and I seek protection in thy sovereignty from the injustice of the sovereigns. So accept my past prayers and fasting, and make my tomorrow and what is after better than my present hour and my today. And exalt me in my clan and my people, and protect me in my waking and my sleeping. For thou art Allah, the best guardian, and thou art the most merciful of the merciful. O Allah, I am quit before thee on this day of mine and on all Sundays that follow it of associating others with thee and of heresy. And I devote my supplication sincerely to thee, addressing myself to thy response. And I observe the acts of obedience to you for the hope of your rewards. So bless Muhammad, the best of thy creation, the summoner to thy truth. Exalt me with thy exaltation, which is never made to suffer loss. And protect me with thy eye, which never sleeps. And seal my affair by cutting me off from everything but thee and my life with forgiveness. Surely, thou art the all-forgiving, the all-compassionate.
Limelight. After a week of debate, U.S. Congress on Friday, 12th of April, reauthorized Section 702 of the Foreign Intelligence Surveillance Act, known as FISA. We take a look at some of the world press and media's coverage of this story. Please stay with us. The British newspaper The Guardian has covered this story and tells us more. House lawmakers voted on Friday, 12th of April, to reauthorize Section 702 of the Foreign Intelligence Surveillance Act, or FISA, including a key measure that allows for warrantless surveillance of American citizens. The controversial law allows for far-reaching monitoring of foreign communications, but has also led to the collection of U.S. citizens' messages and phone calls. Lawmakers voted 273 in favor, 147 against, to approve the law, which the Biden administration has for years backed as an important counterterrorism tool. An amendment that would have required authorities seek a warrant failed in a tied 212-212 vote across party lines. Donald Trump opposed the reauthorization of the FISA bill, posting on his Truth Social platform on Wednesday, 10th of April, "Kill FISA. It was illegally used against me and many others. They spied on my campaign." The law, which gives the government expansive powers to view emails, phone calls, and texts, has long been divisive and resulted in charges from civil liberties groups that it violates privacy rights. House Republicans were split in the lead-up to the vote over whether to reauthorize Section 702 of FISA, the most contentious aspect of the bill, with House Speaker Mike Johnson struggling to unify them around a revised version of the pre-existing law. Republicans shot down a procedural vote on Wednesday, 10th of April, that would have allowed Mike Johnson to put the bill to a floor vote, in a further blow to the Speaker's ability to find compromise within the Republican Party. Following the defeat, the bill was changed from a 5-year extension to a 2-year extension of Section 702, an effort to appease far-right Republicans who believe that Donald Trump will be president by the time it expires. Section 702 allows for government agencies such as the National Security Administration, the NSA, to collect data and monitor the communications of foreign citizens outside of U.S. territory without the need for a court warrant, with authorities touting it as a key tool in targeting cybercrime, international drug trafficking, and terrorist plots. Since the collection of foreign data can also gather communications between people abroad and those in the United States, however, the result of Section 702 is that federal law enforcement can also monitor American citizens' communications. Section 702 of FISA has faced opposition before, but it became especially fraught in the past year after court documents revealed that the FBI had improperly used it almost 300,000 times, targeting racial justice protesters, January 6th suspects, and many others. The overreach emboldened resistance to the law, especially among far-right Republicans who view intelligence services like the FBI as their opponent. Donald Trump's all-caps post further weakened House Speaker Mike Johnson's position. Trump's online remarks appeared to refer to an FBI investigation into a former campaign advisor of his, which was unrelated to Section 702. Other far-right Republicans, such as Matt Gaetz, similarly vowed to derail the legislation, putting its passage in peril. The California Democratic representative and former Speaker of the House, Nancy Pelosi, also gave a statement in support of passing Section 702 of FISA, with its warrantless surveillance abilities intact, urging lawmakers to vote against an amendment that would weaken its reach. Nancy Pelosi said, "I don't have the time right now, but if members want to know, I'll tell you how we could have been saved from 9/11 if we didn't have to have the additional warrants." Debate over Section 702 of FISA pitted Republicans, who charged that the law was a tool for spying on American citizens, against others in the Republican Party who sided with intelligence officials and deemed it a necessary measure to stop foreign terrorist groups. One proposed amendment called for requiring authorities to secure a warrant before using Section 702 to view U.S. citizens' communications, an idea that intelligence officials oppose as limiting their ability to act quickly. Another sticking point in the debate was whether law enforcement should be prohibited from buying information on American citizens from data broker firms, which amass and sell personal data on tens of millions of people, including phone numbers and email addresses. Section 702 of FISA dates back to the George W. Bush administration, which secretly ran warrantless wiretapping and surveillance programs in the aftermath of the 9/11 attacks. In 2008, U.S. Congress passed Section 702 as part of the FISA Amendments Act and put foreign surveillance under more formal government oversight. Lawmakers have renewed the law twice since, including in 2018, when they rejected an amendment that would have required authorities to get court warrants for US citizens' data. Last year, Attorney General Merrick Garland and Avril Haines, Director of National Intelligence, sent a letter to congressional leaders telling them to reauthorize Section 702 of FISA. They claimed that intelligence gained from it resulted in numerous plots against the United States being foiled, and that it was partly responsible for facilitating the drone strike that killed Al-Qaeda leader Ayman al-Zawahiri in 2022. The website Reddit has also covered the same story and tells us more. Congress spent the past week in a fractious debate over a major government surveillance program that gives U.S. authorities the ability to monitor vast swathes of emails, text messages, and phone calls without a court warrant. In a vote on Friday, 12th of April, lawmakers ultimately decided to keep that warrantless surveillance intact and pass a two-year reauthorization of the law, known as Section 702 of the Foreign Intelligence Surveillance Act, or FISA. The law has long been contentious among both progressives and libertarian-leaning conservatives who view it as a violation of privacy rights and civil liberties. Donald Trump has likewise lambasted it out of personal grievance. Its defenders, which include intelligence agencies and Joe Biden's administration, argue that it is an important tool in stopping terrorist attacks, cybercrime, and international drug trade. Section 702 of FISA is a measure added in 2008 to the Foreign Intelligence Surveillance Act, first passed in 1978, which allows authorities, including government agencies such as the NSA and the FBI, to collect and monitor communications. More specifically, it gives them the authority to survey the messaging of foreign citizens outside of United States soil and to do so without requesting a court warrant. Although Section 702 was ostensibly intended to be used to monitor foreign terrorist groups and criminal organizations, law enforcement agencies have also used this authority to collect and survey U.S. citizens' communications. This is because Americans messaging with people abroad are also liable to have their data accessed, which has led to improper use of the law and charges from civil liberties groups that it gives authorities a backdoor into warrantless searches.
Choose to think better. Welcome to a better you. IRIB English Radio. Visit us at parstoday.ir/en.
Gaza, October 7th. Boats are moving up and down in the cool sea breeze. Seagulls flying over the beach. The law before the storm. Suddenly, a bulldozer breaks the Israeli-built fence around Gaza. No one really knows what is happening. In no time, fighters from Gaza take control of the Beit Hanun crossing. A land, air, and sea attack into the heart of Israeli-occupied territories. Palestinian forces attack military installations and take over various settlements. The Israelis in the Sharon Plain wake up to the blare of sirens. They're caught off guard. Danger is around the corner. They don't expect their holiday to be ruined like that. Israel describes the operation as an unprovoked attack, blaming Hamas for disturbing the peace in the region. In the United States, politicians echo the same narrative. Former U.S. President George W. Bush calls Hamas cold-blooded killers.
This was an unprovoked attack by terrorist people willing to kill innocent people to achieve an objective. And don't be surprised if Israel takes whatever action is necessary to defend herself. And it's going to be ugly for a while. You're dealing with cold-blooded killers.
But is the Palestinian group's operation really an unprovoked attack? And isn't there anything surprising about it?
Let me show you a map of the Middle East.
Just a couple of weeks before Hamas launched Operation Al-Aqsa Flood, Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu had unveiled his future map of the region at the United Nations General Assembly. The map had no place for Palestinians, and Israel still included the occupied West Bank and the Gaza Strip, as well as the occupied and illegally annexed Golan Heights of Syria. The little map was in fact the blueprint for the complete elimination of Palestine from the region for the sake of the so-called Greater Israel. Israel's prolonged policy of ignoring Palestinians' rights as a nation is clearly reflected in its illegal settlement projects. Built on usurped territories, these settlements and their cancerous expansion have dashed Palestinians' hopes for establishing their own state and ending their lingering limbo as a nation under occupation. In recent years, the Israeli regime has put settlement expansion at the top of its priorities. In one of the recent cases, Netanyahu passed a controversial resolution in June 2023 and gave a carte blanche to his cabinet to construct more settlements in the occupied West Bank. 1 month later, the head of the Regional Council for West Bank Settlements, Yossi Dagan, submitted a proposal to Netanyahu to increase the number of Jewish settlers in the northern West Bank from 170,000 to 1 million by 2050. There are already over 700,000 Israeli settlers living in 176 settlements and 186 so-called outposts in the occupied West Bank and East Jerusalem al-Quds. All of these settlements and outposts and the settlers who live in them are illegal under international law. Since occupying the West Bank and Gaza, Israel has unilaterally declared tens of thousands of hectares of a so-called state land for Israeli settlements. Mushrooming across Palestine, these illegal settlements have made life excruciatingly difficult for Palestinian communities, aggravating their already dire situation. In addition to depriving the families of a home, which is the main asset and source of mental, physical, and economic security, the settlement building and its concomitant evictions of Palestinians frequently result in the loss of livelihoods and expansion of poverty. These settlements always come with the uprooting of Palestinian trees, destruction of their cultivated land, and discriminatory management of water resources in favor of the settlers. To make life even more difficult, restrictions have been imposed on Palestinian movement and access to resources. The Israeli regime has set up checkpoints, barriers, and separation walls that drastically limit the freedom of movement for Palestinians. This has had a profound impact on their daily lives. It affects movement within parts of the occupied Palestinian territories between the West Bank and Gaza, as well as between occupied Palestinian territories and the rest of the world. Since 2007, Gaza has been subjected to a crippling blockade, which has caused immense suffering and a humanitarian crisis. The food supply is also limited by the siege. From 2007 to 2010, Israeli authorities kept a calorie count of Palestinians' nutritional needs to narrowly avoid malnutrition while restricting access to food for the people in Gaza. Today, according to the World Food Program, a significant portion of the population is food insecure. In 2022, 1.84 million people across Palestine, one-third of the population, did not have enough food to eat. Among these people, 1.1 million were considered severely food insecure, 90% of whom lived in Gaza. The Strip also suffers from an energy crisis. The Israeli ban on the entry of fuel into Gaza means that electricity production is severely limited. In 2023, before the Hamas-Israel escalation, Gaza had only 13 hours of electricity a day. The blockade has also taken a toll on the Strip's medical facilities. Hospitals lack basic supplies, equipment, and infrastructure, and are unable to handle severe cases or provide proper care for the chronically ill. Dr. The blockade also has crippled the economy, leading to high unemployment rates and widespread poverty. With nearly half of the population out of job, the Gaza Strip has one of the highest unemployment rates in the world. Data also indicate that more than 80% of the Gazans live in poverty. The blockade has turned the territory into an open-air prison where the residents have no place to go, no job to do, and no hope to cling to. According to the UNRWA report published in August 2023, for at least the last decade and a half, the socioeconomic situation in Gaza has been in steady decline. Israel's inhumane behavior usually takes even a harsher form. The regime's military operations in Gaza have led to high civilian casualties and widespread infrastructure damage. The destruction of homes, schools, and hospitals has left countless Palestinians dead, displaced, or in desperate need of assistance. Just within the period of a few weeks since October 7th, over 10,000 Palestinians have lost their lives, including over 4,100 children. In fact, in every action the Israeli regime takes, there is one recurring feature: lack of respect for Palestinian lives. From 2008 till September 2023, 6,407 Palestinians were recorded to have been killed by the Israeli regime, more than half through missile attacks. Targeting Al Ahli Hospital in Gaza on October 17th that killed more than 500 Palestinians was the very epitome of the regime's brutality. At the same time, Tel Aviv is also accused of using white phosphorus in its military onslaught on Gaza. The banned substance puts civilians at risk of serious and long-term injuries. As a weapon, white phosphorus has a significant incendiary effect that can severely burn people and set structures, fields, and other civilian objects in the vicinity on fire. Israel's use of the deadly chemical violates international norms. Prior to October 7th, there were about 5,200 Palestinians in Israeli prisons, kept under dangerous prison conditions. Of this number, nearly 2,000 were condemned to life sentences on trumped-up charges. Palestinian prisoners are subjected to torture, starvation, and thirst while being prevented from accessing their medicine. Israel is using different legal pretexts to withhold the detainees from different areas. Palestinians from the Gaza Strip who were arrested inside Israel are being held under the Unlawful Combatants Law, which allows authorities to detain Palestinians indefinitely without effective judicial review. The law defines an unlawful combatant as a person who has participated either directly or indirectly in hostile acts against Israel, or is a member of a force perpetrating hostile acts against Israel. On October 13th, Israel amended the law to make it easier to arrest Palestinians on mere suspicion. The unlawful combatant law is the equivalent of the so-called administrative detention in the occupied West Bank and East Al-Quds, which allows Israel to hold Palestinians from those areas indefinitely under secret evidence, practically, meaning under no evidence. The number of prisoners has now risen to more than 10,000 people. Since October 7th, Israel has arrested some 4,000 laborers from Gaza and more than 1,000 people in the occupied West Bank. Just a few days before Operation Al-Aqsa Flood, thousands of settlers carried out provocative tours of the mosque complex, following calls by extremist Jewish groups. Since the occupation of the East Al-Quds in 1967, Tel Aviv has allowed Israeli extremists to intimidate and violate the sanctity of the mosque. Under the so-called status quo agreement, only Muslims are allowed to pray inside the Al-Aqsa Mosque compound. Entering the mosque with boots on, beating worshippers, firing bullets and grenades, as well as vandalizing the site, have become common scenes in Al-Aqsa, the third holiest place for Muslims. In just 1 year, between September 2021 and September 2022, nearly 50,000 right-wing Jews raided Al-Aqsa Mosque. Is only part of the systematic Israeli campaign to Judaize Al-Quds. Against such a backdrop, the betrayal of the Palestinian cause by some Arab states in the form of the so-called Abraham Accords in 2022 and rumors that Saudi Arabia was just following suit could be regarded as the last straw. The normalization of ties between major Arab states and the Israeli regime sends shockwaves through the occupied territories. Forgotten by the international community, betrayed by Arab brothers and oppressed by the brutal regime of Israel, Palestinians are left with two hard choices: to give up the homeland altogether or to die for it. There is nothing surprising that Operation Al-Aqsa Flood was launched from Gaza. It is an impoverished, congested place inhabited largely by Palestinian refugees expelled from their homes during the Nakba of 1948. Gaza has also been under a debilitating siege for years, which has taken a heavy toll on its people. In fact, what appears to be the largest military response by Palestinians in decades is an inevitable development, an act of resistance and a reaction to the suffering of the nation under a brutal blockade and occupation. It is part of the Palestinian struggle for freedom. This struggle for freedom is, however, an uphill battle. The Israeli regime, in blind rage, has undertaken a new episode of mass killing of civilians. Israel is carpet bombing Gaza. Telecommunications infrastructure has been bombarded, effectively cutting off Palestinians in Gaza from the rest of the world. Tel Aviv has imposed a full blockade on Gaza, with no water, electricity, food, or medicine entering the strip. Meanwhile, the West Bank has been completely blocked. Checkpoints closed all across, paralyzing the whole territory. Israeli soldiers are shooting Palestinians and encouraging settlers to do so as well. Genocide is in the making. Israeli jets will continue to pound Gaza as long as the Gazans' hearts continue to pound for their land. But how many more Palestinians have to get killed? How many more men? How many more women? And how many more children? Life has lost its meaning for the Palestinians, who have been stripped of their homeland. So the only thing they care about is taking back their stolen land, their own land. That's the red line drawn by their blood.
IRIB English Radio presents Viewpoints.
Viewpoints.
With the presence of different scholars.
With the presence of different scholars. IRIB English Radio.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Assalamu alaikum, dear listeners of IRIB English Radio, Call of Islam page. Well, welcome to another episode of the program Viewpoints. I'm Atal, the host of this program. With me in the studio, we have two special guest speakers from the Islamic House of Qom, Sheikh Rouhani and Sayyid Zain. Sayyid Zain, assalamu alaikum.
Wa alaikum assalam wa rahmatullah.
And Sheikh Rouhani, assalamu alaikum to you.
Wa alaikum assalam wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
Now that the holy month of Ramadan is finished, so many people might ask, during these 30 days and nights, we had really nice spiritual experiences, and the effects of the holy month of Ramadan are going gradually to be fade away. After the holy month of Ramadan, what should we do in order to keep them alive, or is better to say to keep the effects of the holy month of Ramadan safe after when the holy month of Ramadan is finished, especially during the month of Shawwal, which is the first month after Ramadan. Now, Sayyid Zain, let's start with you, brother. Can you give us some practical guidelines how to keep it alive after the month of Ramadan?
A'udhu billahi minash shaitanir rajim. Bismillahir rahmanir rahim. First and foremost, it should be said that it's a very important question to ask, and it's very nice that, you know, people are wondering this. That means that their month has gone well, that they have, you know, achieved something from the month itself.
Yes.
That because, you know, they did the fasting in the way that they were supposed to do it, inshallah, and did the ibadah the way that they were supposed to do it, that this question is now coming up, that we have gained something in this month.
Yes.
And how should we retain it after the month?
Yes.
So that's a very good state to be in, inshallah.
Inshallah.
But the you know, it is true that the special blessings of Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala that are available in this month, that are not there after this month, right? Not just that, the different programs that are happening, the durus, the fasting itself,
yes,
all these things are not there to, you know, that extent in the months after the month of Ramadan. So then practically, how should we do this? And there's different things that can be mentioned. Inshallah, I'll mention one of them,
yes,
which is probably one of the most important things, which has to do with our the innermost aspect of the human being, which is the beliefs. Mm-hmm. That if we can strengthen those beliefs, if we can strengthen those ideas, whether it be at the level of the intellect, where we make sure that, okay, whatever doubts we have regarding Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala, regarding the religion, that we get them sorted out. We go to class for aqaid, we ask the scholars, inshallah. So that the foundation, the basis is a strong foundation, a strong basis. And then after that, we can build on top of that. But mm-hmm. that basis has to be strong, which is our aqidah. That if the aqidah, if the belief, there are, you know, places where there's weakness,
yes,
then it becomes difficult to build on top of that. Mm-hmm. So that, inshallah, should be the very first thing that That's we focus on.
Okay, thank you very much. Shaykh Rouhani, the same question for you, brother. Now that the holy month of Ramadan is finished, what should we do in order to keep its spirit still alive in our hearts and souls after Ramadan?
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. This holy month of Ramadan is like a kind of practical solution to, let's say, some of the problems that we may suffer from during the year. That's why this month is called month of Rahmah, month of blessings, because by these divine solutions, I mean the practical kind of teachings of Islam that we practice and observe in this holy month, we improve, we strengthen ourselves, our soul, and we purify our soul by all these practical teachings and doctrines of Islam. So it is very good, it is very, let's say, nice to continue.